Welcome to Focus on the Delaware Valley. I'm Laura Lewis, and with us today, Ed Lafferty is back. He is a public affairs specialist with the Social Security Administration. Easy for me to say.
Yeah, thank you so much, and hello again to you.
Hello. It's always fun when you come in here in a vague sort of way because, you know, you're bubbly personality. Because, boy, this subject is just a minefield, isn't it?
Yes. I mean, well, just remember that we're talking about 69 million people who got the cost of living adjustment beginning this year, the number of people who pay into Social Security, and financial planners emphasize again and again, Social Security is a major funding stream for so many of us.
You know, we talked about that last time, about, you know, so many people are dependent as Social Security makes up the bulk of their planning for their retirement. So let's see here. We got a lot we're going to talk about today. First, you started off with one of the good, you got a couple of good things going on. One, that you've got more hours at the offices and the cost of living increase that you just mentioned as well. So two good things to start.
Yes, the cost of living, always enjoy telling people that. Now, it was 1.6%. Nobody's buying a Maserati on that. But it is one of the few defined benefit plans where there is a cost of living adjustment. If you look across the board at so many pensions, and of course, 401ks, then we're not counting that, but people do depend on it. But these things fluctuate. You're dependent on the stock market, bond market. Obviously, inflation is such a meaningful point for most people. It's a real inflection point in terms of keeping up, not just today, but next year, a decade, two decades, three decades. And so the cost of living adjustment is terribly important. People look to that, and it helps. Doesn't replace everything. We do lose in terms of inflation as you can never keep pace with it, but it does assist people. It helps them to stay level. The other point is, and I'm glad to bring this up, in 2012, the Social Security, because we had a shortage in terms of number of employees, we needed more hiring, and so many people, you already know the famous baby boom generation applying for benefits. So much work, Social Security would close at noon on Wednesdays. No one went home, but we closed to the public so that they could catch up with all of the technical work. After all, someone comes in, applies for benefits. There are inquiries, questions, updates, and so forth. But somebody has to do work after you leave. Somebody has to make inputs. Somebody has to process it and so forth. And so for this entire time, from 2012 to January 8th this year, we closed at noon. And in terms of the public, Social Security is open Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday, 9 to 4. But for Wednesday, 9 to 12, that's a significant amount. And so the new commissioner of Social Security, Andrew Saul, had determined that was one of the points where we're really not serving the public well. Wait times increased. Your accessibility, not everyone has easy hours. Obviously, you leave work to go to the Social Security office, and it's closed. So I am pleased to bring that information. Nationally, this is for all of the Social Security offices, 9 to 4, Monday through Friday. So what we hope is that it cuts down on waiting time, we can process faster, and we can assist people that much more who need to come into an office.
And actually, it's very rare that anybody does need to come into an office, isn't it? You can do almost everything from birth to death online now.
Well, you make a great point on this. We really are touting the emphasis on doing online services from, as you just pointed out, getting a Social Security card, a replacement Social Security card, a Medicare card. You create a My Social Security account, and you can do a range of things. I know you already have a My Social Security account. Thank you for the last time we talked, and you actually listened to me. I thank you. The reason for creating a My Social Security account first, though, is in the past, Social Security would send your Social Security statement, a list of the earnings from the very first time you started paying into Social Security, the present date. And it would tell you, here are the years on which we base our formula. This is how much you'll get for retirement, for disability, if you die, what your dependents would receive, and so forth. And so we wanted people to look at that. And because of costs, Social Security created a My Social Security account, because the paper form comes out to people 60 and older, but everyone else, you have to create this digital form. But once you're there, you can look at your statement, print it out, save it, and actually check it for that. But more important now, once that's done, you can apply for retirement benefits online, disability benefits online. Once you're on Social Security, you can get a replacement Medicare card, as I point out, Social Security card in most of the states, not all, but in Pennsylvania, definitely, Delaware, New Jersey. The other point, though, is that once you're on, you can change your direct deposit, change your address. You can do a range of things. Now, not everything can be done online. You can't apply for survivor benefits, children's benefits. And the reality is, with so many people on, there are so many issues. People do have to come into the office. But we really hope, and we emphasize this again and again, if you can, try to do it online. It makes it easier for you. You don't have to travel to an office. You don't have to wait in the office. And it makes it easier for those people who do need to come in, because there are people who do have to talk to someone, who do have issues, and it's one-on-one. And so you have three choices for Social Security. When you apply, for example, you can do it online for retirement, for disability. You can make an appointment and do it by telephone or in office. But there are a lot of questions people have that get beyond just filing for benefits, and they need to come into the office. They need assistance. And so that's why we've expanded the hours. Let me amend that. The Commissioner of Social Security expanded the hours. I did not.
Now, you just alluded to special programs, like the benefits for the spouses and for children, survivors, et cetera, like that.
Yes.
Well, we had big tax cuts. They're looking now to, you know, find other ways to fund the government. And one of the things that they are looking at is our Social Security and disability benefits. And so is there paperwork? And what should we have? What should we keep? And what should we be prepared for? Especially if we get a diagnosis of something and we think we might need disability eventually, or we are looking to the future, et cetera. What kind of stuff should we have in hand and hang on to?
Well, the first one is the statement, obviously. And in fact, I'm glad you bring that up about disability. For most of us who are, and I include myself, obviously closer to retirement, we obviously look at our Social Security statement because we're close to that fabled retirement age. But younger people need to look, because the number of people who become disabled, obviously prior to retirement age, I mean, they're all, in terms of Social Security, needing to apply for benefits because they can no longer work. Disability can strike at any age. You can be 20, you can be 30, you can be 40, 50. You've paid into Social Security. So the first thing you need to do is look at your statement. If you're specifically talking about disability, I keep a record of whom you've seen. Because the way Social Security, let me take two steps back. The way Social Security is set up, it's always for adults. There are children's benefits, disabled children's benefits. I shouldn't say disabled children's benefit, disability benefits for children who are on SSI, Supplemental Security Income. There are disabled adult children's benefits. But those would be based on a parent who's retired, disabled, deceased. But those individuals are over 18. So we're talking about adult disability now. Supplemental Security Income, welfare program, for as people describe it, it's really a general assistance program. But for adults, for all of those individuals applying for disability, it's can you work in the society that's available in your area, not just where you work today, but anywhere else. And so individuals want to keep records of their doctors, the test, hospitalizations, especially because a record of what are the things that keep you from working. In other words, it might be the case that you have several disabilities, one of which keeps you from working at the moment, but the other ones contribute. So what we want to have is as comprehensive a record of your disability or disabilities as possible. Now, you don't have to provide us with the actual medical information in hand. Would be wonderful if you have it, but merely having names, addresses, what did you see this doctor for? When were you there? What were the medications, the labs, surgeries, and so forth? So keep as much of that information as possible so that you can give it to us and we can be more efficient. We can do the job that much faster.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's go on to, here we're going to give you an example. Sitting around the fire pit with some friends, and they're all smug and happy, and they're saying, yeah, we're thinking about retiring. Like, what? Really? You're retiring? Yep, we're going to be 65 in 2 years, and we're going to retire. And I look at them, and I said, I think you're younger than me, and I know that I ain't retiring at 65 for full benefits. Are you sure about this? Oh, you're 65. And I got to laugh and be all smug, and you know, because hey, I know somebody at the Social Security Administration, and I'm telling him, oh, man, I'm going to wet all over your retirement plans right now because you're not getting them at 65. And so let's talk about ways we can shoot ourselves in our own feet and also affect our spouses, because we always talk about reducing our benefits when we retire before our time, but we're affecting other people with our decisions.
That's a good point. We'll take a step back. The reference you made, we hear this all the time. It used to be that the full retirement age amount, and full retirement age basically is your benefit is not reduced based on age. You didn't go on early. You didn't go on apply for benefits with Social Security prior to your full retirement age. It used to be 65. That was a while ago. People born between 43 and 54, their full retirement age went up to age 66. People born 60 and later, their full retirement age is 67. And this year, people born in 1958 can now apply as early as age 62. Because you can always apply as early as age 62. That is correct. So 62, 62 and a half, 63, 64, 65, you can still apply for retirement benefits any of those months prior to your full retirement age. However, someone who was born in 1958, their full retirement age is now 66 and 8 months. The reason that matters is, yes, they can go on as early as 62, but they will take quite a big reduction. It's permanent. So the first thing, that is, when they reach their full retirement age, the amount doesn't ratchet upwards. I do want to amend that. You do get cost of living adjustments, for example. But the percentage that's been reduced, and to give you the numbers, and I will not pretend that I can multiply on this, but for someone whose full retirement age is 66 and 8 months, if you go on at age 62, you will only get 71.7% of your full retirement age amount. Put in simple numbers, if you were going to get $1,000 at 66 and 8 months, at age 62, you get $717, which is a hefty reduction.
It's 30%, basically.
Almost 30%, and you've lost that amount. Now, again, you're going on early, want to say it, but you brought up a great point. It isn't only that you go on early, but in terms of survivor benefits, that is your widow, widower, if you predeceased them and you went on prior to full retirement age, they can never receive the full retirement age amount, because survivor benefits works off of what is your typical full retirement age. You get 100% if you're full retirement age. Question. Did they apply, the person who's deceased, prior to full retirement age? Yes. Then there's a formula that's applied, and you could never receive the full retirement age amount. Now, that's for survivors, not while they're alive. So the formula is a little quirky. For life benefits, for a spousal benefit. So I'm married, I have a spouse. There are same-sex benefits, obviously. So when I say my spouse, I'm saying I file for retirement. My spouse potentially could apply on my Social Security earnings. What would be used would be my full retirement age as a baseline. But if I die and I went on, that is, applied for benefits prior to full retirement age, whatever that amount was, let's assume age 62, there's a carryover effect. So they would never receive, as a survivor, my full retirement age amount. This is a little difficult to do on the radio because you really have to draw the numbers out. You can see the difference. But the point is, going on early not only affects you directly as the worker, but if you have survivors, the survivor will, widow, widower, surviving divorce, will not receive the full amount.
You pick it at 62. You get hit by a bus the next day. When your spouse goes later, that's it.
Well, assuming If you just applied after you did 62 and you never received the payment, we'll use the full retirement age amount. You have to have actually collected it. And by the way, it's
okay. Six months later.
Well, the 6 months. Yes, there's always a carryover if you've received something beforehand, mm-hmm. prior to full retirement age. Now that affects the widow and widower, not a divorce house. We're talking about someone who's actually currently the spouse. They end up applying for benefits later on. We take into account there's a limitation that the individual actually went on prior to full retirement age. Now, when someone goes in to an office, or you can do it online, there are actually graphs and charts showing the reductions so that you would know ahead of time what impact. There's no magic to the formula. You can actually go online, run through the numbers. But the point is, be aware that there can be an impact.
Think it through very carefully before you sign on the line or submit that form.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And, you know what? We're at the halfway point already. This is Focus on the Delaware Valley. I'm Laura Lewis. Today we're talking to Edward Lafferty, Public Affairs Specialist with the Social Security Administration. Here's where you go. SSA.gov. Go there for absolutely everything. SSA.gov has information about everything that we're talking about and scenarios and graphs for things you don't even want to contemplate. I was going to bring this up a little bit later, but just talking about numbers and all of that other stuff. I have finally gotten my first scam. I have felt very neglected and unloved because no one has ever bothered to reach out to me. And I got my first phone call talking about Social Security and telling me to do really stupid things.
Congratulations.
I'm very happy.
You are the first person I've met who was pleased with getting a call from scammers. But we are experiencing a nationwide problem. This isn't just in the local area. In fact, the Office of the Inspector General of the Social Security Administration receives literally hundreds of thousands of reports about these scams. Phone calls, now emails, purporting to be from Social Security, using a Social Security logo, and claiming that the person's overpaid or there's something wrong with their Social Security account, or they need to contact or give a call to verify personal information. And so basically what we're finding is that people are sometimes responding, sometimes paying, because individual scammers will threaten, actually coerce, so that the person will pay for a non-existent problem, or in order to fix your benefit or increase your benefit, you'll have to buy a gift card, make a donation, give us your credit card number, any number of options here.
That's what they were telling me, that, oh yes, there were some errors in my account. And I should have realized immediately that this was the part that was the best part. I don't get Social Security, so that there are some errors. But I'm actually listening to this guy thinking, how gullible do you think that I am? And now of course I'm looking back and going, pretty gullible. I continued to listen to him, and I knew darn well that it was a scam, but it was fun. What do we do?
Well, one of the points is Social Security will not coerce, threaten, bring to bear all of the pressures, and definitely we never, never say buy a gift card, give a donation, send us money, Bitcoin, give us your credit card. That isn't what we do. In the first place, we will send you a letter on letterhead, Social Security, if we ever have to contact you. The other point is, if there is an issue or there were an issue, you always have appeal rights. In other words, we just don't say give us your money or else. And out of the clear blue, without any preamble, any sense that you've contacted us before. Now, of course, we do contact you because you will have applied for benefits, or you might have called us or something like that. So if you've initiated something, certainly we would be getting in touch with you oftentimes. But the sort of thing of there's something wrong with your account, send us money. The reason that this is so terrible is the number of people who actually do become frightened. We all have pressure points. We're all vulnerable in a certain way. As you said, you listen to the call, but it's easy because let's assume you've been on Social Security for 10 years and had never heard from us before, other than we send money to you and we send notices, and suddenly there's a problem. Now you're afraid. You call dutifully and some nice person is trying to help you by taking your money. If you get off the phone, you're an adult. After all, you've lived your life, you feel competent. Suddenly you feel relatively incompetent. You're embarrassed. I just sent money to a total stranger. I didn't even try to find out what I didn't contact Social Security. I thought they were Social Security. So we really need people to make a report. You can do it. There's a hotline for the Office of Inspector General, 1-800-269-0271. Or if the hope is that you would go online to file a report. And the reason for it is the hotline is getting so backed up with so many people. But we really do need you to let us know that you're getting these contacts, these calls, these emails, because unfortunately, the scammers are very creative and they keep changing the way they do their business. And so now we're getting emails on the with a logo from Social Security purporting to be from Social Security. So we don't even know that's taking place if we don't get a report, if someone doesn't tell us. So please do let us know, even though we are aware, it is somewhat embarrassing. You take pride in not getting called, as you just said, and it's easy for me to say, file a report, you just gave money to a scammer.
Now, now I'm insulted because I realized he just assumed I was old.
How dare he?
I know, I thought it was just my turn in the barrel. But no, they obviously knew enough about me to know that I'm closing in on an age where, you know, I might be getting benefits or spousal benefits or something. So I'm insulted now. But they did report that they were from an agency working with Social Security.
Oh, yes.
You don't use other people, do you?
Especially for debt collection. Once again, Social Security will not contact you, threaten you, or chide you or coerce you into giving us money. We don't do that. And that includes gift cards, donations. And by the way, we're not going to raise your benefit because you send us money either. And the real point is, if you have had issues with Social Security, you'll get appeal rights. So if there were an overpayment, you have appeal rights, and we will send you a letter detailing the appeal rights. We never do the things these individuals are doing. And so we really hope that people are aware. That's really the key. If you're aware of it, you won't engage. You'll know that this is not from Social Security. But if you do feel, I'm not really sure if it's legitimate, remember, oig.ssa.gov. You can contact them if you think it's something sketchy about this. But if you think it almost makes sense, you're not sure, we have a 1-800 number, 772-1213. That's our national teleservice number. You can get other information through Social Security, not from some stranger who just tries to basically hit you up for money.
Wouldn't you think somebody would hire a Harvard graduate at this point to proofread? But thank gosh they don't. But anyway.
That is one of the real thankful points. When you read some of these, you immediately know this did not come from.
Right. What we're trying to take away from this, obviously, then, is if it's demanding money right away, it's not you.
Right.
If it's threatening you, it's not you.
If anything comes where the threats, the demands for gift, and this is, I've yet to catch up on this. I haven't gotten one of these. I've gotten scammers, but wanting you to pay back through gift cards, donations, a range of issues. So the real key is however it comes in, you can always verify. For example, if you're really not sure, go online. You can actually submit a report. You can also, if you think, I've received you shouldn't be receiving emails generally on that. That's very rare. But if you received a letter that obviously looks fake, call the 1-800 number for Social Security, 1-800-772-1213, asking, are they doing a pilot? Are they making contacts? You can give them information and they can tell you what's going on. We do contact individuals. We do send mail to them. We will do that. But if you find that you're suspicious, your tax money pays for a 1-800 number, the online, and our offices. don't hesitate to contact us. There is a point in which I've had people say, we really didn't want to bother you. This isn't a bother. You pay us for this. So don't hesitate. Contact us, contact us, contact. Verify. Don't be afraid to do that.
And you know what? We're running out of time. Let's talk real quick because we are in a general enrollment period.
Oh, yes. This I always want to emphasize this because for Medicare Part B now, the physician's supplementary medical insurance, outpatient, the one that people pay premiums on that comes right out of your Social Security benefit generally, there's an initial enrollment period. Medicare Part A hospital insurance, you've paid for that 1.45% you pay taxes on. But Medicare Part B is paid for through in part through premiums. And so when you turn 65, and this goes back to your point about individuals applying for full retirement age 65, Medicare's still age 65. So you have an initial enrollment period, 3 months before you hit 65, the month you're 65, 3 months after, to apply for Medicare Part B. There's no penalty. If you're continuing to work, you're 65 or older, you're continuing to work, you're on your employer group health plan, or you've retired, but you're on your spouse's employer group health plan because they're working. Someone has to be working. Then you could delay filing for Part B until you stop work. It's called a special enrollment period. There's no penalty for delaying because you're under your employer group health plan. However, what if you're 65, you've retired, and you just don't want to pay the premium? It's $144 a month per person. So you decide, I really don't want to do this. When you go beyond your initial enrollment period, the only time then you can apply is in what's called a general enrollment period. Right now, January through March, for every year you do not pay a premium, full 12 months, your premium would go up 10%. And you wouldn't, if you applied in your general enrollment period this year, January through March 2020, you wouldn't get Medicare Part B until July. So you're putting it off and you're paying a penalty. Now, again, it's a trade-off. But we've had people come in who haven't paid, who retired, were not working, didn't want to pay the premium, and come in 5-10 years later. Their premium really goes through the roof. On the other hand, of course, they haven't paid a premium. So just be aware that this is the time, again, general enrollment period, January through March.
Everything is a gamble with you guys. How healthy do I feel today?
Retirement. You
Grandpa,
mentioned
grass. How did he live?
Because you mentioned that.
How's my job look?
Yes, exactly. You mentioned, for example, about when we were talking about filing for retirement prior to full retirement age. You could wait beyond your full retirement age up till as far as age 70. You want to file for retirement at least as of age 70. But there are what are called delayed retirement credits. Your benefit goes up 8% for each year. When we were talking about someone who was born 1960, their full retirement age 67. If they wait, in other words, they don't apply for benefits until age 70, their benefit goes up 24%. What, of course, is the obvious downside to this? Yes, it's a trade-off in terms of longevity, funding streams, health. So yes, if all of us knew ahead of time exactly when we no longer are here, it would be a lot easier.
And of course, you do make all of this as easy as it is possible to make when you're dealing with graphs and age and considering your genetic makeup. And you find it all at ssa.gov. That's ssa.gov. Everything that we've talked about today and so much that we never got around to discussing. You've got things like compassionate allowances. It can tell you things about how you can actually reduce your benefit by your choices. But again, all the calculators, all the information, and most important too, information about how you can report a scam attempt, all can be found at ssa.gov. And that number again is 1-800-269-0271. If you've got if you do have one of those callers or emails, remember they don't reach out to you. You reach out to them. And if they do reach out to you, they're not going to be threatening you or demanding anything immediate. So I think that's what we can take away from today.
Yes, definitely. Thank you so much.
SSA.gov for the Social Security Administration. Today we had Ed Lafferty in, a public affairs specialist. Ed, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
It's always great to have you here. I'm Laura Lewis. This has been Focus on the Delaware Valley.